a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant. That's a G, yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Give them seven in a row. You say Kikuchi with nine strikeouts in the game.
Because sometimes you swing at the arm speed and the ball just never gets there, and the slider down again.
Eight in a row. You say, how impressive can you be in your first Astros start? He has rebounded after that quick two-run lead for the Tampa Bay Rays.
I sent you two, Sean and Joe, a text after Yusei Kikuchi's first two at-bats as a pitcher resulted in a hit and a two-run homer, saying, oh boy,
yeah,
here we go. And then Yusei Kikuchi on Friday settled in and struck out 11 Tampa Bay Rays. At one point, he struck out eight in a row. It was awesome to watch. Here is my question, now that we've had a couple of days to think about it, and also that we have a full series where Houston Astros pitchers struck out 41 Tampa Bay Rays. Are we as impressed by what we saw from Yusei Kikuchi as we were on Friday right now? Are we as impressed?
I'm not.
It definitely ruined it a little bit to see Spencer Arrighetti outdo him with 12 strikeouts. And it's unfair to Kikuchi. That was a great performance by him. But I will admit, I need to see another start from Yusei Kikuchi where he's looking really good before I'm thinking to myself, oh, the Astros actually didn't end up doing too bad in this trade.
Yeah, I mean, baseball is a fascinating sport because, like, he immediately starts throwing the changeup more and pitches that he's not using in Toronto. He's way more effective than he had been recently. Like, the percentages are so different than everything he did, which is like, how stupid are you, Toronto, if this actually works? But the starter struck out 30 batters in three games. Like you said, the entire staff had 41. That's over 50% of the outs they got were via strikeouts. So it does, it takes away a little bit. Like, it just, it's no offense to Kikuchi, but when, you know, he gets 11 and then Blanco, who's not at his best, gets 7 and then Arrighetti gets 12, it just, it takes away from the excitement a little bit. How I felt, you know, I was up here on Saturday a little bit and we're talking to Sean and Brian and the guys. And it's like, everyone was like, oh, okay, well, like, you know, they showed us a little bit after one start, but then the next two starts happen, and I'm just like, ah, it just takes away a little bit from it, for sure.
If they scored more runs over the weekend, we would be talking more about Yusei Kikuchi today. But as Sean explained to us a couple of weeks ago, when Sunday goes poorly for the Astros, the vibes are off, and they scored zero runs in a game where the Rays scored one run yesterday.
It's also the most extreme example of it because it's, A, they just didn't score any runs for two games.
Yes.
And honestly, for Friday's game, they scored three.
The numbers for the Astros offensively of late are rough. 3.05 runs a game over the last 17, somehow they are 7-10, but only the White Sox have scored fewer than that over that stretch.
Yeah, the offense is so bad. The thing with Kikuchi is, like, I don't need to see 11 strikeouts again, though. I just need him to be what we asked the first time, and we kind of want to reset those expectations. So let's go back to the quality start thing. Like, I'm not going to ask him to go out there and strike out 8-plus guys over 6 innings. I just want to see his next start, which is, I believe, is going to be in this series. Just give me a quality start, and then I think we'll all be feeling still – I'll feel better about the original start on Friday night if he can follow that performance up with another one and just be consistent at that point.
I mean, he was an out away from a quality start, which is why the whole quality start thing is, like, so stupid.
Yes.
Where it's like – one out makes the difference of whether we could call it a quality start or not.
Right, and it's pretty quality if you're throwing 8 straight strikeouts.
Yeah, like, that's better than a lot of quality. What he did is better than what a lot of quality starts are.
Tied a franchise record. Yeah, quality start, whatever. Doesn't matter in that moment.
But there is a little bit of, well, came against the Rays. And maybe Hunter Brown can be like, hey, know how that feels. Having an awesome start where everyone goes, it's against the A's.
The Astros are certainly feeling pretty good about bringing in Kikuchi, though, and you've already heard the Astros are stamping themselves on this Kikuchi start. This was said after the game, courtesy of Chandler Rome. In their meeting with Yusei Kikuchi Wednesday, the Astros encouraged him to throw his changeup more. And this is something he tweeted at 8:04, actually, during that game on Friday. He's already thrown 12 through 4 innings. The most he threw in a start with Toronto was 19. He only threw more than 12 six times in 22 starts. He had 7 punchouts at that moment in time. He got 4 more. He used his changeups 26% of the time on Friday, higher than his season average of 11%. I do not know what it is about the Astros, who historically have been able to bring in Justin Verlander, whose numbers were not as good as they had been before in 2017, and have him looking the way that he did from 2017 on. Same thing with Gerrit Cole. Same thing with Charlie Morton. Same thing with, I guess you can make the argument, Zach Greinke to an extent. Mm-hmm. Same thing with now Ronel Blanco. Same thing with, of late, Hunter Brown. And Yusei Kikuchi, I don't know what it is that the Astros numbers people, specifically those who are connected to the pitching coaches, I don't know what it is that they see that allows them to see a pitcher should be throwing more pitches than others. But it is the one thing that over most of the last decade, the Astros have clearly had a leg up on in everybody in baseball, regardless of who's the actual pitching coach.
Especially because it just feels so simple. At times, that like I don't understand why other teams don't quite figure it out. Like you look at Kikuchi's like swing and miss rate, and it was an effective strikeout pitch on his changeup when he was in Toronto, but he just threw it so little. And then the Astros are like, "Hey, dude, throw it a lot more," and then it goes very well. Like it seems so simple in a way, but it's like maybe it's the outside voice is like. Gets to these guys, but like, it just doesn't seem that complicated.
It feels like every other organization should be capable of saying, this pitch works really well for you. Yeah. You should throw it more.
Yes.
Yeah, because what happened, we might have talked about it, might have been Dell and I don't know, it all blends together, but we were talking about how that the Astros pitch after trading for Kikuchi was like, yeah, we can fix them.
Yeah.
And we're like, so should we expect that in start one? Or is there a process to fixing this guy?
Well, that was my concern, is that there's only a couple of months left in the year. So maybe they would eventually be able to fix him. But to fix him when he's a rental means he's probably going to be more expensive for another team. And it's not like one of those episodes of Antique Shop where you're bringing in an antique that's busted up, you clean it up a little bit, and you sell it. No. This is just like something you're fixing and leaving out on the side of the road after you're done with it.
You're getting 10 starts of a fixed pitcher, basically, is the idea of it. But we thought, oh, maybe not start one he's fixed. And apparently, because the fix is, hey, you know that pitch? Throw it more. That pitch? Throw it less. Boom. Now you're an ace. Congrats.
And that's why like we'll see what happens in the next start. Because if we know he can be that good. He's done it before. I mean, Paul has talked about this, where he saw him in Seattle. We saw what his numbers look like the start of the season with Toronto. Like, he can be a really good pitcher.
He puts together great stretches. It's really a matter of, can he do it the rest of the way? And he might have to, because we don't know when we're going to see Luis Garcia again. Lance McCullers done for the year. They basically confirmed that yesterday. And with Justin Verlander, who, as Joe pointed out, has been dealing with a shoulder injury, not just a neck, thus his lengthy absence, still has to make 2 rehab starts to get back, even if things are feeling better for him right now. Shout out to the Minute Maid Park ballpark. Now, for a moment in time, I got a little arrogant. I got a little cocky. I thought that the people that worked at the Houston Astros, specifically those who were in charge of the stadium sounds, I thought that they were listeners of the show. And I thought to myself, if they're going to play this little sound effect after every single strikeout, then they are Gallant and George fan number ones, P1s as they call them, because they were doing this after every single Yusei Kikuchi strikeout. You say. It turns out that was something that happened in Toronto. I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I'm really bummed out about that. I honestly was so excited for a moment.
I felt so bad. I felt bad saying, telling you the truth in the text. I should have just lied to you.
Yeah, like, you should have. I feel like I was being bad. Have done the research.
I sent the text back, and I was like, I should have just been a bad teammate and let you come in today and just, like,
yeah,
but like, they listened to me.
I had a long midnight walk, just walking down the street, just playing some sad music. I found a statue.
You playing that song? Because that song's kind of sad.
That is a sad song. I found a statue. As I often do, I rode my motorcycle around town at night. And I found a statue. And guess what? There is a statue of me in Houston. You just have to find it. It's in the right spot. And I looked at the statue up on this pedestal, and I took off my helmet, and I threw the helmet at the statue, and I said, "Who are you?" And Eye of the Tiger was playing in the background slowly. And now, guys, I'm on my comeback. But that was a devastating moment for my pride and ego. Please respect me in this very difficult time.
I did find it funny, just like the shots of like Justin Verlander every time they played it.
Yeah.
And he was singing.
Yeah,
like,
that's great.
Apparently, Sparky was getting annoyed by it on the radio broadcast.
Oh, you funny duddy.
That really surprises me.
I thought he was the fun one.
Especially because I've worked with those sound people. They used to request music when I was producing games, and they would request the most garbage music for us to bump back with, and like they never complained. So I'm a little surprised, like that annoyed them.
I thought
but
he was
used to it.
I thought he was the fun
he
one.
He is the fun one, but maybe he just doesn't like Lisa Loeb.
I will say he did hear it for 8 outs in a row.
That's
at
true.
One point.
So
it's a little overboard, it feels like.
No, yeah, it's not.
New pitch clock, too. So that's like once every 30 seconds he's hearing it.
People like repetitive things. People like laugh tracks on sitcoms. Oh, we can't have Yusei after Yusei Kikuchi throws a strikeout?
I think we have to keep it now.
Well, it always should have happened.
Now, there has to
be... Mariners are idiots for not doing it.
Yes. Now, if he... Okay. Let's go bad situation here for a second.
I know.
If he gives up 5 earned runs in the first inning...
And then strikes out for out
you
number 3.
You can't play it. like there's got to be
no.
There's got to be some rules. Like we tried this already with Ryan Pressly. We said Ryan Pressly can't have his entrance song. They kept it. But like if Kikuchi is getting smoked, you can't keep playing it.
You can. You're wrong.
I know, you can't.
If he's having a bad first inning, you want to get him back on track. And apparently he likes it.
I was going to ask, did they do it in the first? Did he strike someone out in the first inning? B, did they do it in the first inning?
They must have.
Because that would have been fun.
Yeah.
I'm sure that went over well with Astros Twitter. That was my favorite part, is just the sequencing of how things went for Yusei Kikuchi, where it's just immediate off the bat, oh my God, we're bleeped. And then slowly throughout, by like the fourth inning, it was, oh, okay, no, this guy's good. It also helped that the Astros scored some runs, got back into it.
3, but.
Yeah, I mean.
But enough to like.
Enough runs, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the first inning was he gave up a double to a guy that should be a Houston Astro, Yandy Diaz. Then he gave up a home run to Carlson, who also could have been a Houston Astro. And then he struck the next 2 guys out.
Okay.
So they probably went right to the USA.
Right.
After the 2-run homer.
As people are tweeting, panicking, they went with the Lisa Loeb drop. Good to know. They stood on business.
And he did a hat tip. And that was nice, Yusei Kikuchi. What did we think about the hat tip?
It's deserved.
Yeah, it was a good tip of the hat.
For your debut, yes.
Yeah.
If now, second start, and he has the same thing, it's like, okay. We can't be tipping our hat every time you pitch 6 innings, 2 earned runs.
But he loved it. He's happy here. That's all that matters.
Yeah. No, again, for debut, good.
I want them to abuse the Yusei button.
Just hit it over and over.
Over and over.
After every strike.
Yeah. Every swinging strike.
I was going to say every out. You guys are going a little far.
Every swinging strike. How about every swinging strike?
I just know how Paul goes.
No, I want to get in these hitters' heads.
Wait, every swinging strike?
Yeah.
Every called strike, too.
No. Just the ones where the swing and miss.
Okay.
So that way, we won't kill it. Well, you know? Well, it'll be sort of like in Mortal Kombat. There's this certain thing that you did if you, like, face planted.
Uh-huh.
This random guy like would pop his head out from around the corner and go, "Toasty!"
Yep.
It'd be like that.
Just like that.
And really, it would get in their heads.
What a pull.
That's yeah.
That's a great reference.
Yeah, this is.
I don't know how many people are going to get that reference, but I get it, and I love it.
That's
all that matters to me right now. Young Sean over there doesn't seem to understand this reference.
I got a lot of references, okay? Some would say that's a sign of something. It is Gallant and George. He is Joe George. I am Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Did the Houston Texans miss out because they didn't sign this guy? And now he's going to be playing him twice a year. Stick around.
Galanta George.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
The Tennessee Titans signed a player that I wanted the Houston Texans to sign. And they signed him for practically nothing. Quandre Diggs, most recently a safety with the Seattle Seahawks, where he showed he has incredible ability to cover downfield, signed a one-year, $5 million contract to play for Tennessee. He made the announcement on Twitter himself. It's a new age for the media newsbreakers out there. I really feel that this is a missed opportunity for the Texans. It would be one thing if he signed, Joe, a deal that was worth $10 million a year or something like that. $5 million for 1 year? When you have the questions at safety that you do, you were bad when it came to just keeping things in front of you at the back line of the defense last year. And by the way, that's what the position is all about. It's called safety. So unless Jimmy Ward's healthy for a full season, and unless Jalen Petrie can figure out how to better fit into this defense, I think this is a missed opportunity. And I'm not convinced that either of those two things are going to happen.
With Petrie, too, because it really seems like he's your nickel corner at this point.
At the very least, he is going to be playing in the nickel at points this season. Is he the outright guy? I do not know. But it stands to reason, Joe, that just given the lack of depth at cornerback position, that he is a front runner.
Yeah, so if he's there, then you're relying on Kalen Bullock to be your other safety next
maybe
to Jimmy Ward.
And Bullock did play very well in preseason game number one. But remember, that's against backups, mm-hmm. and he is a third-round pick. He played at USC. He's got size. He's got range, all that stuff. And look, the Texans have shown recently that they are willing to put young players into uncomfortable situations right away. Just take a look at Kamari Lassiter, the second-round pick. He's already your starting corner, but two rookies as potential starters in the secondary, especially considering we haven't really seen Kalen Bullock going with the first team unit at any training camp practice. That is interesting to me, and not in a good way. After that, at safety, if Jalen Petrie is playing nickel a lot, we're talking MJ Stewart. We're talking, Eric Murray, guys who, you know, are probably best case scenario in the NFL, multi-year special teamers. Mm-hmm. Not guys that you want out there as safeties. Not meant to be an indictment, but this was a big problem for them last year. And I almost wish that Quandre Diggs got paid, so this would be taken off of the table for the Texans. Instead, 1 year, $5 million. I mean, I'm sure there are special teamers on this roster who are making as much. I know Robert Woods' contract on the roster. He's probably not even going to make it to the end of training camp. His number is literally that much. You could dump Robert Woods and sign Quandre Diggs like that.
Yeah, I do agree with you. I think this is a huge missed opportunity because I think they need to add another safety. Like, I just don't. It would be a bad decision to go into this year with this as your safety depth. If you're going to move Petrie to nickel, and that's going to be his primary position, then you have to add depth, and not even just depth. You have to have a starter, and there are starters out there. So Diggs was a very good option. Now, I won't lie. I think it's not the worst thing for the Texans that they're starting two safeties is what was very poor for Seattle not that long ago between Quandre Diggs and Jamal Adams being the new safeties of the Tennessee Titans. That's very interesting that they're reunited now in Tennessee. But the Texans need to make a move. It's the cornerback and safety is very clearly the biggest issue on the defense, maybe the biggest issue on this team, and you need to address it. In some way, whether that's signing a veteran corner or just going all in with your safeties or with your young guys. But Bullock had major tackling problems at USC.
Major tackling problems. And if the safety is the one that is supposed to get all these guys who are running past your entire defense, there are going to be bad plays from time to time. But you are right. He had some shaky moments with the Trojans. And I feel like at the beginning of the year, where you're not going up against great quarterbacks as much as you are the rest of the year in those first six games, maybe Lasseter and Bullock will improve significantly over that six-week stretch. And you're hoping that the defense that you've got the last week of the year is just going to improve week to week to week. Like that's how a lot of NFL defenses work. Like a guy at the beginning of the year who's not thought to be a very good corner or very good secondary player, enough experience, you're going to feel a little bit differently about that guy. But these were big question marks this offseason, and it is very optimistic to believe that a second-round pick and a third-round pick are going to fix the holes in your secondary, which can be made worse by the next time that Derek Stingley re-aggravates something. Not predicting that that'll happen. I'm hoping this is going to be Stingley's first 17-game season in the NFL, but we haven't seen it yet, and it stands to reason when you have one hamstring injury, you're going to have more.
Yeah, well, even if he doesn't miss a whole game, like players miss time, and you have no depth at corner also. I mean, I know Okuda said that's part of the reason why he did an interview with Aaron Wilson this weekend. He said that's part of the reason why he was here, what was the competition that's here. But Okuda and Lasseter is not exactly, you know, a great duo at a corner if you have to get it. And even if you go with these young guys, Paul, with Lasseter at corner, if they don't make substantial improvements from week one to the Dolphins game, then you are screwed when you play the Dolphins and Lamar and Mahomes in three consecutive weeks. That's no matter who you have out there, it's going to be super daunting and super challenging. But it's just a lot to ask these young guys to be ready for that.
I'm with you there, but I'm not fretting about it as much because I think by the end of the year, they'll be playing a lot better. They have to. If you have essentially a full season's worth of experience by that stretch, you're going to be as prepared probably as you possibly can be. But you are also operating under the assumption that all those guys are going to improve with the more playing time that they get. Benjamin Albright is a Denver sports radio reporter. He works for KOA Colorado. He is fairly connected when it comes to breaking NFL stories. He was asked about Broncos safety Justin Simmons and said that Simmons has had over a dozen offers. He's just looking for the right situation that he probably signs this week in the AFC South. I saw some speculating that it could be the Indianapolis Colts. Simmons would make a lot of sense here, and if Diggs is off the board, Diggs was my number one safety left, then why not?
I think Justin Simmons. I think you have to. At this point, I mean, looking at the depth chart for the Indianapolis Colts, it probably makes a lot of sense for them too. But Justin Simmons makes a ton of sense. And now the market's kind of set for you. So if he had all these offers and he didn't like what he was getting, well, if Diggs is getting $5 million, then Simmons is probably getting 1 year, 7 to 10, I would guess, which like you have plenty of money to pay. That at this point, you can, as you said, you can cut Robert Woods to help that cause even more so, so you can address other positions if you feel the need. But we'll see how this preseason game goes, but it would be nice if he's going to sign. It would be really disappointing to see Diggs and Simmons sign in the AFC South and neither of them be with the Houston Texans.
He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We are 31 days away from the start of the NFL season. And to continue that countdown, we will remember an unrepentant a-hole who was truly one of the dirtiest players in NFL history and should not be remembered as the Hall of Famer that he is. This guy sucks. And by the way, he also affected a current Houston Texan indirectly. Who is it? You'll find out who this jackass is next. Stick around, Gallant and George.
We're ready for some football, baby.
The countdown to the NFL season continues with Paul Gallant and Joe George.
31 days away from the start of the NFL season. Let's go back in time to a play that we would have played for number 32 because of who made this play happen. What I'm going to tell you is that for the most miraculous play in NFL history to ever happen, it's so awesome that this jackass is actually the reason it happened. But first, let's hear that immaculate reception one more time.
Last chance for the Steelers. Bradshaw trying to get away. And his pass is broken up by Tatum. Tipped off. Franco Harris has it. And he's over. What? Franco Harris. Grabbed the ball on a deflection. 5 seconds to go. He grabbed it with 5 seconds to go and scored.
Let's watch this again.
1 million to 1 odds on this one.
So, that's the immaculate reception. For those who don't know, there was controversy over that play for years because no one was 100% sure who the ball bounced off of. Did it bounce off of Steelers wide receiver Frenchie Faqua? At the time, had it bounced off of Frenchie Faqua, that would have been an illegal catch by Franco Harris. Or did it bounce off of Jack Tatum, who wasn't going to knock the football down and wasn't trying to go for an interception? Tatum was doing what he did all the time, which was just going for a kill shot over the middle of the field. And in going for that kill shot, the ball bounced right off of Jack Tatum into the hands of Franco Harris, who scampered in for a touchdown. And again, I'll say it again, could not have happened. A bad moment like that could not have had a better recipient of karmic justice, because Jack Tatum, who called himself the assassin, is one of the biggest a-holes in the history of the NFL. The guy actually wrote a book called Call Me Assassin, where he bragged about paralyzing Derek Stingley Jr.'s grandfather, Daryl Stingley, in a preseason game. He never even tried to apologize to this guy after paralyzing him in a effing preseason game. One of the absolute worst. And there was a moment where Stingley and Tatum were going to do an interview. Stingley pulled out at the last second when he found out that Jack Tatum was actually trying to promote his autobiography, Call Me Assassin, which I actually read when I was in fourth grade. I didn't know much about football then. I did have a deep appreciation for the game. And I didn't know much about who is an a-hole and who isn't an a-hole. But Jack Tatum, a-hole. Having read that book, confirmed it. 8 years old, Paul knew. Jack Tatum, a-hole.
Yeah, I find his Wikipedia page interesting because like they paint this story of his close friend John Hicks saying that it made Tatum a recluse and something that ate at him for his whole life. And then the next sentence is he never apologized or tried to apologize. I just say sorry. Like, even if you don't mean it. Like, you paralyze. You ruined someone's life, basically.
Yep. Yeah, he sucks. Just completely sucks. He had 7 picks for the Oilers in 1980.
All right.
Arguably the greatest season for any safety in Houston in NFL history. And then he retired after the year was done. Great Houston Texans who wore the number 31, Aaron Glenn, Bernard Pollard. Remember him back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
Patriots fans, not fans of Bernard Pollard. That's like the reason the Tom Brady rule got put into effect in the NFL. David Johnson. He was 31.
Legend.
Charles James. Okay. Star of Hard Knocks in 2015.
Yep.
Shiloh Kao, Texan special teamer that everyone said was a really good special teamer all the time. Also Steven Nelson, and now it's Damian Pierce.
Damian Pierce, running back 1.
He has to be right now because there's no Joe Mixon.
I don't remember Shiloh. Was he a big deal?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, people would just talk about what a great special teams player he was all the time.
He was a big-time preseason guy.
Yes. Okay.
Training camp a preseason guy.
Yes.
And then when he actually had to play safety. Not great.
Mm. Not great.
Steven Nelson. Miss you, bud.
Happy retirement to Steven Nelson.
Poor one out.
I hope the podcast is going well. Seriously, I feel like it would be an entertaining podcast, but every single clip I've seen from it, I feel like I've gotten a muted Steven Nelson. I want Nelson to let his wings fly.
Well, he's like trying to say now that everyone took the milk dud man thing the
wrong way.
No,
you got
to
lean into it.
I just the more he tries to explain it, the more confused I get.
You should talk about how he was traumatized by milk duds growing up and that D'Amico Ryans triggered him and that's why he left the NFL.
I like that.
The NFL's top 100 list is complete and Patrick Mahomes is the 4th best player in the NFL. It's official.
Okay, NFL players don't know a lot. I don't know. Lamar Jackson is ahead of him. How?
Tyreek Hill's 1, Lamar Jackson 2, Christian McCaffrey 3. White guy over Patrick Mahomes. I'm surprised no one has called racism. Players NFL, in the NFL, are they racist putting Patrick Mahomes behind Christian McCaffrey? I don't know.
I think it's the opposite. I think it shows how not racist the NFL is by recognizing the greatness that is Christian McCaffrey. How is Patrick Mahomes number four? Behind Lamar Jackson. Do they vote on this? I wonder when they vote on this. Like, how do you watch the playoffs and say, yeah, Lamar over Patrick? I don't quite understand how you can come to that conclusion with how bad Lamar Jackson plays in the playoffs.
I don't either. I mean, my thought is that they were putting this list together, players, in the middle of the year. Jackson was having yet another great year. He was finally throwing well in a season. And by the way, he threw for a lot of touchdown passes the year he won MVP back in 2019 as well. But I think people were like, oh, he's finally figured it out. So when this award is voted on in the regular season and you've got players, you can see how a lot of players would say Lamar Jackson's at the top, and maybe not enough were saying Patrick Mahomes is at the top. But maybe it has something to do with the fact that Lamar Jackson's also a great runner, where Mahomes is known primarily as a passer. But yeah, it's hard to spin zone this one.
Yeah, who had the best regular season last year, it's like, okay, I can see how they come to this list. But then, yeah, when you actually throw in, like, A, that's not how they do the list, like, consistently, as evidenced by guys who played four snaps being on the list. And so there, it falls apart. I don't know. There might be a little bit of the how guys like Kyrie Irving are always a little bit overrated by NBA players with, like, just when you play against them, you're like, God, how do you stop that? I played great defense, and he just shot over me, where there's a little bit of that with Lamar Jackson, where it's like, I don't know, I was in the right spot. He just ran past me. How do I stop this? Same thing with Tyreek Hill, too.
I agree with Tyreek, though. I'm fine with that.
Tyreek Hill is number one.
I don't think a quarterback has to be number one. Like, yes, they always are the MVP. Yes. But I don't think a quarterback has to be the best player. Now, I would...
See, better than every single defensive player and every single offensive player. Take quarterbacks out of the equation.
I mean, the biggest argument really is Justin Jefferson, I would imagine, which who's not in the top four.
Well, I think that would be for top wide receivers. I think Tyreek Hill is one for the receiver side of things because of the speed that he brings to the table. But is he better as a offensive player than defensive players?
Like Micah Parsons.
Micah Parsons. Miles Garrett. I guess Aaron Donald isn't in the equation anymore.
T.J. Watt.
T.J. Watt, yeah. I don't know.
Who was the top defensive player?
I think it was TJ. I think TJ Watt might have been.
I feel like we've only talked about the offensive player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it was TJ Watt this year. I think he came in like number eight.
No, it was Miles Garrett at five.
Okay. Swinging helmets.
And then Chris Jones at six.
That's my favorite take that I had in Seattle was saying like what Miles Garrett did to Mason Rudolph wasn't that bad. And all the Seattle people, the crying libs, started whining. Like, that was assault. And I was like, no, it wasn't. Like, no, it wasn't. Mason Rudolph had it coming. We all had to watch that in Monday Night Football. And I was being kind of sarcastic, but I was like, I didn't want to watch Mason Rudolph anymore. And Miles Garrett didn't either. And you know what he did? He got him out of that game.
I just like envision you saying that and then seeing like whatever, like if you guys had a text line, how bad that went over. That take, like, yeah, that would not go well.
That city does not grasp sarcasm at all. At all.
Especially if it's like that, I would imagine.
For a city that thinks it's really smart, you would think that they would understand sarcasm a little bit. Because I would go on these little riffs, and I was like, yeah, Nickelback, greatest band ever. And the people that were on my show were like, what? Are you serious? And I was like, yeah. Photograph and Photograph. It's number one and two songs of all time.
Rockstar.
Rockstar, number three.
Ooh.
Over their heads. All right. By the way, we're talking about... undesirables, Jack Tatum, for some, Tyreek Hill, with some of his off-the-field shenanigans. He just got his contract restructured. The Chiefs have John Gruden on their coaching staff right now.
I saw that. Interesting. I guess he's suing the NFL, and they're not, like, totally blackballing him from the league. So...
I believe that he worked with Andy Reid under Mike Holmgren back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that might be why Gruden's out there, because there's some familiarity between Reed and Gruden. Not a bad consultant to have in there. I don't really like Gruden as a head coach, but not a bad consultant to have.
It's like all the like college football consultants and the analysts where they have 45 guys in the team photo wearing a polo shirt where it's like, hey, if you can get this guy to do it, sure, go for it. I don't understand how it's really worth this time, but I guess it's better than doing nothing. And I don't know what the harm is.
Yeah, like last year makes more sense, right? He goes to New Orleans where he's with his former quarterback, a former coach that was on his staff with the Raiders, and like they're actually like he's trying to like help implement the offense for Derek Carr and the Saints. I don't know, like, what's he teaching Patrick Mahomes? How to run away from a pool noodle?
Hey, Spider 2Y Banana.
I still don't even I don't remember what Spider 2Y Banana is. Is that in the NCAA football game?
No, it's
not. Oh, okay.
No.
I don't think there's any references to John Gruden in the college football game.
Not anymore. Yeah, everyone talked about it all the time, and I was like, is it really that great of a play?
It was also just like, I think it just got memeified, where it was just like, what a funny name for a play, where I'm like, it's not that funny of a name for a play.
I think it was the way the word he banana said it, too. Like,
Spider Y2Y Banana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. I don't do a great Gruden.
It's not terrible, though.
By the way, speaking of disgraced NFL coaches, Sean Payton wants all kickoffs that don't land in the box to go to the 35-yard line.
I like
Sean
that.
Sean Payton famously suspended for a year, dumped on the Houston Texans the offseason before this one, and now is the coach of a team with Bo Nix as their starting quarterback.
I like this rule because I thought the kickoff was boring. So making the punishment the 35-yard line if you kick into the end zone instead of the 30.
Here are the rules. If there's a landing zone, if the kick is short of the landing zone, like if you squib it, or if it goes out of bounds, just like before, the ball goes to the 40, except for it has to be in the air when it gets to the landing zone. But if it's a touchback, the ball goes out to the 30. For a ball that hits the landing zone and bounces into the end zone and isn't returned, it goes to the 20. Sean Payton wants all of them to just go to the 35.
I don't love that. Because then it incentivizes you to let it bounce into the end zone.
Well, no. If it bounces into the end zone, it's 20.
Or no, to bounce in play and go into the end zone.
True, but I mean, if it bounces in play, then someone who's in coverage could theoretically get to the ball if you just let it sit there.
Theoretically. So, but I'm saying for like where it bounces, like how a punt works.
I think the bigger thing right here is that he wants them all to go to the 35, and I agree with that. People are going to start booting down the back of the end zone probably by week 4, because people are going to realize that there's way more things bad that can happen. Starting at the 30-yard line, the other team starting at the 30-yard line, it's really not that bad. They're already doing it at the 25.
Yeah, you know? it was boring. Like, I think I was listening to something, and they said it looks like a practice play. Like, it looks like you're practicing while a game is happening. It looked so bizarre. Maybe we'll get used to it, but after one preseason game, and that's all it is, it is just not, it's not worth it. I would rather just get rid of the kickoffs at this point.
We're close to that.
I think we are too.
I think it's a, if this doesn't work, they're just getting rid of the kickoffs. Everyone starts at the 30.
5 years later.
I know.
Is that when we make the change?
Might be like 3 years. People are already out on this.
It might be next year.
Yeah.
I mean, if everyone this offseason,
which is ridiculous because there's like, what, 4 kickoffs? Exactly. No thanks.
Exactly. If the Dolphins actually put Tyreek Hill back there, like it could be absolutely electric. But like the most buzz this thing has gotten is when the Steelers were, it was maybe they're going to put Justin Fields back there. But like everyone's
more about Fields.
Yes. But like Joe Buck is like trying to like make it seem like a Super Bowl has been won every single time they're going to commercial break because a kickoff is coming. So like they're trying so hard to push this. If it flops, I wouldn't be shocked if they change it next season, honestly.
He's Joe George. I'm Paul Gallant. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. An old friend. We thought he was leaving. Guess what? He's not going anywhere. Who am I talking about? You'll find out. One of your favorite Houston Astros is sticking around. Stay put.
Tomorrow morning, I'll be headed over to the Heights, 767 North Shepherd and O Athletic. You can check them out, oathletic.com, where you can see their full class schedule that they have offered for you. Whether it's weightlifting, agility training, you can do some powerlifting even, or you want to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, boxing classes. They have all those kind of classes for you. So whatever you're wanting to try or whatever kind of workout you want to do to get in shape and get healthier in 2024, they have for you at O Athletic. Check them out, 767 North Shepherd in the Heights, oathletic.com. That's also where you can see all the recovery options that you have for you, like the endless pool, the sauna, the steam room. It's all there for you. Check them out, oathletic.com, and tell them Joe George sent you by.
Broadcast. broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Rafael Montero was designated for assignment, and that assignment is going to stick because guess what? You're going to be able to hear Rafael Montero pitch right here on your home for Sugar Land Space Cowboys Baseball. The Rafael Montero Show got picked up by another network. Woohoo! Because he cleared waivers and has agreed to set assignment. So Rafael Montero is going to be headlining things for the Sugar Land Space Cowboys. First half champions of the Pacific Coast League.
I feel like, well, because he's doing this,
it's important for the stretch run. I think he's going to be awesome for the Space Cowboys.
We'll see how long he's down there for. This feels like something, like, since he took it, like, maybe they'll fix something or they'll try to fix it and give him another shot.
Well, what are they going to fix? I mean, they've had him on the Major League roster for multiple seasons.
And true.
2022 is the only year where he looked good.
I also don't really understand how this works. Like, does this mean – so, like, is he on a different contract now? That's why I don't understand baseball, like, how this is allowed. And then when he comes back, that's when he gets all of his money again. It makes no sense. But you know what? Good luck to Rafael Montero. Him and Justin Verlander leading the Space Cowboys to the playoffs and Kyle Tucker in 2024. They'll all be there for the stretch run.
Will Kyle Tucker be there?
I don't know. Maybe. If Kyle Tucker's going to be there. When do the playoffs start for the Sugar Land Space Cowboys?
The end of September.
Okay.
So they'll be there they won't be there for the playoffs.
Good.
Montero might be.
We hope.
Not for the AAA playoffs.
Well, it's only four games for the AAA playoffs.
Oh, that's right. And then if they win that, because it's the two division champions face off against one another.
In a three-game series.
Right.
But then the finals is
one game.
One game.
Which is the most bizarre thing I've ever heard for baseball.
No, I love that. Just get this thing over with.
So the first half division champion plays the second half division champion in each division of the league, and then they play each other in the final. And then if those two, whoever wins that game plays the one game against the other league.
Yes.
So it's the International League, which is like generally the East Coast teams. That's their minor league. And then the Pacific Coast League is the other one. So, yeah, the Astros might have Rafael Montero pitching for the Space Cowboys. So if they don't make it to the ALCS, I mean, right now they're guaranteed to make it by default to the minor league championship series for the Pacific Coast League, right?
Yep.
Only two teams make it.
So they're in.
To the
PCLCS.
Yeah, they're already in.
PCLCS.
So the PCLCS, and then there's the PCL Championship, and then there's the Minor League Championship, which is essentially like what the Super Bowl was from 1967 through 1970, where...
Just like the Super Bowl.
They were two leagues, and one team would be world champion, but no one really recognized them as two leagues together at that moment in time.
Yes.
Everyone thought the AFL was a bunch of BS.
So... Do you think we see Rafael Montero pitch for the Astros ever again?
I hope not.
I hope not, too. I hope not, too.
I can see it happening in a emergency, like, where they have to go through a bunch of pitchers and they don't have any off days, and so they kind of call him up just to soak up some innings and then send him back down. A Sean Dubin-like role,
but they would be designated him for assignment again, and what happens when he doesn't get picked up again? Would you even want to go through that if you're Rafael Montero?
Maybe he likes to live in Houston. Maybe he likes his house, doesn't want to move.
Yeah, at least he doesn't have to move.
That's true.
He'll move in the offseason. Yeah.
It's either that or don't pitch. So,
yeah, because I don't think he's, you know, pitching for, like, you know, the Yankees.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about someone scooping him up.
There is another year that he will be pitching for this team. So he's just going to be a Sugar Land Space Cowboy all of next year?
My guess is they cut him in the offseason.
Yeah, like, they probably
he officially leaves in the offseason. But I don't really understand how, like, minor league contracts work for veteran players. Like, can he just leave whenever he wants because he agreed to this assignment? Like, I guess not.
What do you mean, leave whenever he wants?
Well, because, like, Eric
Lauer. Yeah, he can just not show up.
Like, Eric Lauer or whatever, like, he opted out of his contract. Like, I don't understand how some guys have opt-outs and some guys don't.
Oh,
they're veterans.
So, those are, a lot of those minor league contracts are, they'll have a date where it's, hey, if I'm not on the big league roster by this date, the player can opt out. And they don't always opt out on that date. They might wait a little bit and then opt out.
Oh. Okay.
That's normally more established guys who then have to go the minor league contract route.
Gotcha, okay. Okay. Well, now we know a little bit more.
There is a minor leaguer that I've got my eye on right now, though.
I know. A minor leaguer?
Minor leaguer.
Minor okay. leaguer.
You did not say a minor.
No, I did not. I think I made that very clear. Come I guess on, not.
You're reaching here.
Reaching. Well, yeah. I'm just keeping my eye on the transaction wire in case the Atlanta Braves cut Yuli Gurriel or let him go. Because he's hitting 278 in AAA right now. So maybe he solves your first base problems. Bring him back, Yuli. 278. He's got 31 RBI, or I mean, 40 RBIs this year. Nine home runs.
I think you're being sarcastic, but I
part of me is not.
I expect more out of Yuli Gurriel than I do from Jay Whitcomb and Zach DiCenzo.
They both hit tanks.
Jay Whitcomb, a utility player for the Sugarland Space Cowboys, is hitting 295 with 23 homers and 84 runs batted in. Zach DiCenzo, who was drafted in the 12th round in 2022, is 17 for 41 with four doubles at Sugarland.
Okay.
And that's practically 500. And he was just promoted from AA 2 weeks ago.
And they both play first base?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll see if it works.
Do you think the Astros should put Joey Loper? Oh, wait, he's gone.
That's mean.
No, they got DiCenzo now.
Yeah, I mean, I want Loperfido back. That's my Italian, and now another possibly Italian person. But he's not named Mario. He's not Mario Joseph like Joey Loperfido was. I don't care if I'm standing for a guy who strikes out 50% of his at-bats. He made great defensive plays, and Loperfido's an awesome name.
Do you think the Astros, when they drafted these guys, were like, wait, so we have a Arrighetti, we have Loperfido, and a DiCenzo? Huh. Like, do you? How,
they're all going to get hurt in the World Baseball Classic.
Like, when do they think they realized, like, wow, we really just have a lot of Italians?
I mean, maybe there's just like an Italian in the scouting department that we don't know about. And he's like, hey, this guy.
Hey, trust me.
If you're a legend for the New York Yankees, do you become an honorary Italian? Because Reggie Jackson would qualify.
That's a good question.
I mean, like, everyone in New York, like, if you're from New York, they love to claim people that aren't actually from New York. You can make it here. You can make it anywhere. Oh!
Hey, I have a cousin. He's a good kid. His name's Mario. He goes by Joey. Play a little outfield. Play a little first base. I'm just saying, Dana, give him a shot.
Reggie ends in a vowel. Why can't we have him? Come on. Forget about it.
And, you know, do a favor for us, maybe down the road. If things come to it, we do a favor for you.
Yeah. We'll give Rafael Montero 3 years and $34.5 million. Oh!
We'll give you protection, Dana Brown. For when you get fired.
Hey.
Sorry.
It's on the right track. The Yusei Kikuchi trade. Home run right now.
18 months from now. Sorry.
Okay, that's the shelf life. That's the first prediction. I'm writing that down. He is Joe George. I am Paul Gallant and Sean Mapes behind the glasses. Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Are the Astros going through a, quote, little funk, end quote, or is this the reality, these offensive struggles? Stick around. We'll discuss next, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.